The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Depending on the theory that the court adopts, assuming there is something clear enough, you're going to see litigation over thousands upon thousands of criminal cases across the country challenging the record collection as being like the cell site records in Carpenter. You're going to have just massive amounts of litigation. And courts may try to avoid that with the good faith exception. They'll say this record collection happened before the Carpenter case, and so we don't have to get into the Fourth Amendment questions just on remedy grounds. But it's going to immediately trigger incredible amounts of litigation, assuming the justices have a hard time drawing a clear line as to what is covered and not covered. That's always been Carpenter's problem. What's the line you're going to draw, and what are the implications? You can sort of think of these cell site records as part of a constellation of maybe 200 or 300 different kinds of third-party business records. And if you're going to pluck that one out, which other ones do you pluck out? And you could say, we're not going to tell you, in which right. case it could be pretty remarkable follow-through if they do that.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, November 29th, 2017. The Supreme Court this morning heard oral arguments in Carpenter v. United States, the latest blockbuster Fourth Amendment case to raise questions about what privacy means in the digital age. The argument was a bit of a surprise across a lot of different axes, and we're going to talk about them all. It's about cell sites. It's about privacy. It's about will the Supreme Court revisit the third-party doctrine, and if so, what the heck will it replace it with? Orrin Kerr is with me here at the Brookings Institution. He is, as Lawfare readers well know, extraordinarily distinguished Fourth Amendment scholar, currently about to teach his last class at GW Law School. It's the Lawfare Podcast, episode 265, Orrin Kerr on Carpenter. So it was a big morning, Orrin.
It was.
So first of all, give us a sense of what the heck Carpenter is and why we should care.
So Carpenter is about government efforts to collect historical cell site records. These are records of what cell towers were used for a particular phone in the past. The government serves a court order under a statute called the Stored Communications Act and can get those historical records that show basically within a mile or two about where a phone was located over time. Really, really helpful in a case like Carpenter, which involved a robbery or string of robberies, where the government can show, what do you know, all the conspirators end up with their cell phones in the general area of the place robbed at exactly the time that the place is robbed. So the question was whether that's a search. And under the third-party doctrine cases, Smith versus Maryland, United States versus Miller, the answer would be no. The idea being that you voluntarily disclosed your general location to the cell phone provider in the course of using the cell phone network, you've given up that information and therefore don't have any Fourth Amendment rights in it. And the question was whether to follow Smith versus Maryland and Miller, distinguish them, overrule them, or something else.
All right. And for the non-Fourth Amendment nerds in the audience, one of whom has already written in to say, can you explain the case for non-Fourth Amendment nerds? Why is this an issue that roils people's sense of privacy and that people, actually it's one of the blockbuster Supreme Court cases of the term. Why do people care so much about this case?
This case is really not just about historical cell site records. It's really about all government record collections. So in the physical world, we have a sense of what the government can and can't do, right? They can go into the streets and watch people. That's not a Fourth Amendment search. If they want to break into somebody's house, they need a warrant for that because that is a Fourth Amendment search. So we have this intuition in the physical world as to what's covered and what's not covered. But imagine the network world or a world of lots of third-party records, cell phones, the internet. Suddenly now a lot of these records are being held by third-party providers. The government doesn't go off into public space, right? There's no sort of internet equivalent directly of public space. They're going to these third-party services that everyone is using, Gmail, your cell phone provider, whatever it is. And they're getting records from these providers. And so the tough question is which of that record collection is constitutionally protected and requires a warrant under the Fourth Amendment, which of it is just up to statutes. And it's really, you know, what's the role of the Fourth Amendment in a world of the internet, in the world of networks, in a world of lots of cameras out there that are collecting records and, you know, this big data world, what's the role of the courts? And that's what it's really about.
All right. So over the last few years, there have been a number of cases where the Supreme Court has kind of teased up that there may be a major reconsideration underway. The Supreme Court's kind of teased that there may be a major kind of reconsideration of Fourth Amendment rules as applied in digital space. So what is the background that brought us here?
Yeah, two cases that brought us here. One is Jones versus United States involving GPS installation on a car that tracked a car over 28 days. The majority said that that was a search because the installation of the GPS device was attached to the car, was a trespass onto the car. But the concurring opinions in that case, which was five justices in total, said that actually short-term surveillance of the car was not a search, but over 28 days, eventually that became a search. And so that was really the argument that Carpenter was making. This is a lot like Jones and the Jones concurring opinions. There were five justices in favor of that view in Jones. This GPS collection is similar, the argument runs, to collection of historical cell site records. It's location records over time that allows the government to reconstruct someone's location. Question was first whether that's correct, that they're really similar. And the other question was, where does that go? Where's the constitutional rule as to what's covered? And part of this is just the clash between those first cases I talked about, which say, if you disclose the information, it's unprotected. And this Jones idea, which seemed to be, you could be in public and yet evidence collection over time eventually crosses some line and becomes a search. Those are potentially in conflict. Justice Sotomayor had raised the issue in her Jones concurring opinion that maybe the third-party doctrine should be overturned, and she was, as you'd imagine, a strong voice for Carpenter today. And then the other case that sets this up is Riley versus California, involving searching a cell phone incident to arrest, where the Supreme Court says, you know, computers have so much information, we have to treat them differently than searches of computers differently than searches of your pockets, for example. So a warrant is needed to search a cell phone incident to arrest, even though it's not needed to search pockets for physical evidence ordinarily, sort of a special rule for computers. So you have special rule for computers with an unclear sort of how far do you take that. Third-party doctrine, how far do you take that? And then this Jones concurring idea of maybe once you reach a certain point, a switch is flipped and that becomes a search. And you mix those all together, and that was really what the debate was about today.
All right. So you are not an entirely neutral party in this debate. You submitted an amicus brief in which you expressed your view of what the right answer is. So let's lay it on the table. What should the Supreme Court do if they sit down with your brief and say, oh, well, now we know what the right answer is because friend of the court, Orrin Kerr, has explained it all to us. What would the opinion look like if they followed your sage guidance?
So my view would be that cell site records are not protected because they're basically the network equivalent of physical observation in physical space. So what you're doing when you make a phone call is you're hiring a third-party service to deliver a communication for you. In the physical world where you had to deliver that communication yourself, you'd have to go out into public and anyone could see you and you could be observed without it being a search. And that what you're doing is basically contracting out that service. And so the contracting out shouldn't change the Fourth Amendment rule. So you shouldn't be able to kind of alter Fourth Amendment protections using technology to maintain the same balance of the Fourth Amendment as you shift from the physical world to the digital world.
All right, so let's talk about the argument, and I'm actually going to start asking you about the argument by giving you one of the questions that just came through on Facebook Live, which is, were the justices' questions future-oriented, thinking of other surveillance technologies, or were they focused on the specifics of cell site tracking?
It varied. It varied. Some of them were focused on cell site tracking. A lot of questions were on the next technology, how cell site location tracking might change. For example, Justice Sotomayor was of the view that, yeah, technically the facts of this case involved resolution of involving, you know, a mile or two, but we should basically treat it as if the facts were very precise monitoring, because that's where, in her view, the technology is going. And there was a lot of discussion, where do you draw the line? So if you're going to say, I think there was general agreement, the third-party doctrine cases covered this. But if you're going to carve out exceptions to the third-party doctrine cases, what should it be? And so they were talking about credit card records. They were talking about bank records. They were talking about sort of a couple different kinds of technology. So they were aware of the world, and there being a lot of questions that would be raised if they take the step of saying this is protected under the Fourth Amendment. And the question they were grappling with is, how do you deal with that? Do you have a narrow opinion that says just this? If it's just this, why just this and why not something else? You know, Justice Breyer was basically saying as a policy matter, okay, we'll carve out this because we don't want the government doing this, but what do we do with all the other things? And so he was, you know, sort of articulating off the top of his head maybe some possible lines that the opinion could draw that could be why this could be protected and other things maybe not protected, or maybe other things would be protected. So a lot of concern, though, about the implications of the decision.
All right. So broadly speaking, how did it go relative to your expectations? What were you expecting the argument to look like, and to what extent did it map on to your expectations?
So I had no real expectations. I had no idea how it was going to go, other than it seemed pretty clear that Justice Sotomayor was going to want to limit or overturn the third-party doctrine, given her Jones concurring opinion. In terms of how it went, you know, I would say it was a good day for Carpenter, but not on the ground that Carpenter was arguing. So Carpenter was really – Carpenter's lawyer.
Yeah, who is Carpenter, by the way?
Bank robber who's – serving a 116-year sentence, not bank robber, I guess a couple different robberies, but serving 116 years in jail and won't get out either, because the good faith exception is going to apply no matter how the court rules on the merits. So he's gonna serve out the rest of his life in jail. But this just happens to be the case that prompted the court to take the case. Nothing special about Carpenter. So Carpenter's side, Nate Wessler for the ACLU, said we should follow the Jones concurring opinions and this short-term versus longer-term distinction. And there was very little interest in that among the justices, including justices that had either written or signed on to the Jones concurring opinion, which was basically, you could sort of imagine the strategy on Carpenter's side. We've got five justices concurring in Jones. Let's go back to them and say, hey, let's do this again. Justice Kagan seemed to be on board with that. She seemed to say this is a lot like the Jones concurring opinions, a lot like the facts of Jones. Let's follow that. The other justices, including the people who'd signed on to that opinion or written that, were not on board. They said, what kind of – we can't administer that line. Chief Justice Roberts said, you know, called the argument incoherent. I don't understand the coherence of your argument. Why have a 24-hour line? Why not, it should be sort of all or nothing. Either it's all a search or it's not a search. Justice Ginsburg asked about – she said, well, so – you know, if you allow monitoring up to 24 hours, that was a line suggested in Carpenter's reply brief. So you'd allow the government to get records from one robbery for 24 hours, but if the person committed eight robberies, they'd need to get seven warrants, you know, need to get additional warrants. Why treat eight robberies differently than one robbery? That doesn't make any sense. So it seemed to be very little interest in this mosaic idea. Maybe Kagan, but she didn't really weigh in on it directly. At the same time, there was a lot of interest among the justices of some sort of privacy line that could say this is protected and it's different from all the other kinds of records because, and then it was figuring out what the because is.
Okay, so what are the options for because? I mean, so five or six votes to kind of reject the Orrin Kerr and government theory of the case. So imagine some degree of splintered opinion for the idea that this is protected. What are the possible reasons that they're flirting with here?
Yeah, so keep in mind, these are oral argument questions, which I'm sort of imagining as arguments, right? So the question might be, well, why not this? And so I'm sort of imagining the justices thinking, maybe I'll draw that line. And so these are the possibilities that were floated. Justice Breyer suggested maybe there should be a physical bodies theory, where if the information reveals something about the physical body, then it's protected under the Fourth Amendment. And then the question is, well, why is a historical cell site record about the physical body? It signals the location of the phone. The phone is near the person. Therefore, the record would be kind of about the body in some sense. That was what he just
to be clear, what is significant, given that you can follow the person down the street without violating the Fourth Amendment, why is it different if you provide a record that describes following him down the street?
Yeah, so the concern was sort of animating why the justices might want to carve out an exception to the third party doctrine. It's just, it gives the government so much power to be able to reconstruct this information. You want to cabin that somehow. How do you cabin it? And then they sort of offered these different lines that might be drawn.
Okay. So what's line number two?
Line number two, Justice Sotomayor suggested that maybe you could have a rule where if the government has cause to think there's evidence of a crime, it's not a search. But if they're just collecting records when there's no reason to think there's evidence of crime, then that becomes a search. Really, what she seemed to be saying, the thing that was motivating her was the government collecting records of people, you know, she said, like, in the bathroom or in their closet or they're in their room and the government is watching them. And she was talking about hypotheticals like, what if the government turned on your phone? Shouldn't we, you know, we need to stop the government from turning on people's phones, which is like so obviously a search under existing doctrine. It's like really far afield from these sorts of facts. But she seemed to be worried about the government watching people that were innocent just for kicks or just without cause, basically. Not traditionally what the Fourth Amendment search test is about, but that was at least a possibility that she floated. The big surprise of the day, this was actually probably the most dramatic aspect of the argument, was Justice Gorsuch, who proposed a property-based view of why Carpenter's records collection is a search.
Now, let's pause over that for a moment, because first of all, I want to sort of break down what you just said. So first of all, why is it a big surprise? And secondly, what does a property-based view mean as a practical matter? If what's the doctrine that he's teasing here?
Yeah, so there are sort of two branches of what is a Fourth Amendment search under current law. One is if the government violates a reasonable expectation of privacy, and the other is if the government trespasses onto a person, house's paper or effect. The idea is one is sort of the literal, that's what the text of the Fourth Amendment is. The other is more sort of that's what the concern of the Fourth Amendment is. And it's actually not clear they're any different. I think actually they're basically the same thing. But in the Jones case, the majority said, we're separating these two out. We've got the privacy-based reasonable expectation of privacy cases, and then we've got the property-based cases on trespass. And so it's not surprising that Justice Gorsuch would be interested in looking for a trespass-based argument in Carpenter or how the trespass doctrine plays out. What's striking is that he was suggesting some really novel ideas for what would make for a property right, which if you go with that and suggest sort of where he was suggesting, you could completely rewrite the Fourth Amendment from anything that – not only from anything we've known in today, but really anything that was contemplated in the 18th century. It's sort of a very libertarian view expressed as an originalist theory, and almost like an article that Will Bode and Jim Stern had in the Harvard Law Review last year, a positive law model, the Fourth Amendment. The idea was if you could find a law, any statute that said that you had an interest in the information or the government that generally there was some sort of protection, then the statute would effectively make it your thing. And so Justice Gorsuch's theory seemed to be that you know, maybe there's a common law conversion claim you had. Here's the hypothetical that he raised, that I've studied this issue for a long time. I confess I've never heard this hypothetical. And it was, okay, so what happens if someone breaks into T-Mobile and steals the records belonging to a customer? Would the customer have a common law conversion claim for the theft of the records? Sort of, is it their records or not? And Michael Dreeben said, no, this would always be the cell phone company's records, not the user's records.
So Equifax immediately files an amicus brief.
Yeah, right? So we might have conversion claims against whoever was behind that. And so Michael Dreeben, arguing for the government, says, well, you know, the property interest is the company that created the record and is storing the record. The user, who probably doesn't know the records exist, they don't have a property right in that. And Gorsuch pressed him again and again. Let's assume they have a property interest. Would it be a Fourth Amendment search? And you could see Michael Dreeben wondering, like, what kind of question is this? And he was not sure what to make of the hypothetical. And Justice Gorsuch got pretty worked up about, you know, making him answer the hypothetical. It was a somewhat awkward moment in the argument. But Gorsuch was suggesting some very libertarian themes based on the idea that basically, if the government is getting your cell site records, they're taking your property against your consent, and that it might be a search on that basis.
So one person has already written in, are the justices leaning toward creating an individual property right to cell phone records? And if so, where does the right stop vis-a-vis other records? And I take it from what you've said that this is something that Justice Gorsuch seems to be thinking about. Is there any evidence that anybody else is?
No. And in fact, Justice Alito responded with a fairly strong response. He just said, so has there ever been a property interest in information that people don't know has been created, they have no access to, they can't control, they're used by a business for their business purpose? You know, he's sort of just basically brought the case, like, this is not a traditional property interest. So Alito was pretty strongly of the view that you can't follow this property view to that result. None of the other justices said anything. I was talking to somebody after the argument who told me, so this is secondhand, that Justice Sotomayor's eyes lit up when Justice Gorsuch started offering this theory. So I'm sure she certainly, you would appreciate the vote, because that may be a fifth vote for Carpenter. But it's not clear that there would be any other justice to follow the property-based view.
So were there any other possible theories of why Carpenter wins, or is that the range?
So another possibility, so Chief Justice Roberts was a bit hard to read. Roberts and Ginsburg were somewhat hard to read. He suggested maybe that this is, you know, sort of under Riley, which was not about what is a search. It was instead what is a search reasonable. But under Riley, maybe you sort of treat cell phones as different, and you just have a separate rule for cell phones. And so, you know, one possibility is that that will be a five-justice majority opinion based on, like, this privacy idea of just cell phones can invade privacy, and we need to stop this invasion of privacy from occurring, limited just to location or maybe limited just to cell phones. It was sort of unclear which side he was on, but one interesting sort of, or troubling possibility, I think, is that you might have four justices ruling for Carpenter on this privacy idea. Maybe they agree on what the theory of privacy is. Maybe they don't. Gorsuch ruling for Carpenter on a property theory that none of the other justices will touch or find persuasive. And then you have the question, okay, so Carpenter wins, although he'll ultimately lose, but you have sort of a rule that cell site acquisition is a search, and nobody has any idea what the rules are for any other case, because you have all these different theories in play and there's no one majority rationale. And so it may create a lot of chaos. That might mean that, you know, that's possible that you'll get a narrow majority opinion on a privacy view for Carpenter. But I had to guess, if I had to guess, Carpenter wins the case on some theory.
Okay, so let's go through the other justices who seem to be leaning the other way. Somebody writes in, does Justice Alito have a different view here because of the third party doctrine? Is that where the key distinction from Jones is for him? What can we say about his position? But let's also add to that the others who either didn't seem sympathetic or who maybe didn't speak at all in one case that you can hypothesize without having been there.
So the justices who seemed pretty, to my mind, pretty clearly inclined to rule for the government were Justices Alito and Justice Kennedy. Both of them pretty clear out of the gate saying, this is a lot like United States versus Miller. This is a lot like Smith versus Maryland. Haven't we been here before? This is just the third party doctrine. You can't come up with another line that's different from this. Nate Wessler for the ACLU suggested the short term versus longer term. Justices, how can you administer that? None of the justices really seem to be buying the idea that you can draw the short term, long term line. But Justices Alito and Justice Kennedy were, you know, making pretty clear they just thought this was Smith versus Maryland and Miller. And Wessler had suggested, well, this is actually more sensitive information than in your banking records and in your telephone records. And Alito in particular was just, you know, just said, isn't your banking record sort of super private? All who you transacted with, what, you know, how exactly how much the items were that you bought or that you deposited, or your records of who you called, that can construct all of your intimate relations and when you're calling them, how, you know, how long the calls are. That's really, really invasive. Isn't that much more invasive than cell site records? So Alito seemed to be signaling that he thought the government was right on this case, and Kennedy was similarly inclined.
Is there anything we can say about what Justice Thomas is like, you know, where based on his prior work in this space, we can anticipate that he might be?
I don't think so. So Thomas joined the Jones majority opinion, which had the trespass rationale. But what's striking about the, you're sort of trying to figure out where Thomas might be, you know, you could imagine him in a bunch of these different boxes. And to some extent, it's whether, assume Gorsuch writes an opinion on a trespass or some sort of physical property theory. You know, there's two questions. There's, in general, if there's a property interest, is an invasion of that a search? That's one question. The other is there actually a plausible claim that this is a property interest? And so I think most of the justices would be on board that first rationale. It's the second, really, it's the application that's the problem. So we just don't have anything that Thomas has written one way or the other to give us a strong signal.
So it could be, in you, as you describe it, as many as seven justices siding with Carpenter. You seem pretty confident that Alito and Kennedy are not. And as few as four, right?
As few as four. I think that's probably right. That's probably right.
So if the government wins, it's a five vote win.
I think that's probably right.
So a question from the audience. Did the justices draw any important or clear distinction between historical cell site data and real-time or prospective cell site data?
They didn't. There was some discussion of it at the argument, and the justices didn't seem terribly into that distinction or thinking. They didn't engage with it very much. As I'd mentioned earlier, Justice Sotomayor seemed to be sort of group it all together. Most of the justices seem to be of the view like, you know, location is location. It's all about location. And so you treat it all together. And the question was whether to treat third party different from other kinds of records. Michael Dreeben certainly pressed the idea that these were not precise records and that if it's real-time tracking, GPS tracking, it'd be a very different set of facts. It'd be very technologically very different. That could be a search. Going into the phone would be a search. So he tried to draw this distinction between historical and real-time and focus on the technology. And I don't recall justices focusing on that much.
So another question that's been bothering me about this case for a long time, are the cell phone companies or service providers, are they in it at all? Because this is exactly the kind of thing that they could resolve if they wanted with a terms of service click through, right? That we provide to law enforcement on request subject to the following terms, people consent all the time to all kinds of uses of their data. When the companies ask them to click through as a condition of their service provision. And so my question is this a situation in which the companies want to
be as high a wall against government acquisition as they can, or they don't really care what the rule is as long as it's clear and they're following it.
So a couple of thoughts. Usually the telecommunications companies are pretty strongly on the privacy side, because why would you want the government to have ready access to your customer records, right? So you want to provide a good service to the customers in general. You'd want to keep the government away from that. There were a bunch of tech companies that filed a brief, an amicus brief in Carpenter, that was on behalf of neither side. It was, I think it was sort of maybe generally sympathetic to Carpenter, but not suggesting a clear rule. They were saying there shouldn't be, you shouldn't have straight adherence to the third-party doctrine, but you shouldn't totally overturn the third-party doctrine. It was somewhat in between as a brief. So it didn't take a particularly clear position.
All right. So let's
let me go back actually to one thing that you mentioned that I forgot. Whether terms of service can matter. There was some discussion of that. Some discussion of maybe, do users agree that they're, consenting to this when they sign up? And then there's a little bit of discussion, but it didn't really sort of carry the day. I suspect that if they want to rule you have Fourth Amendment rights and cell site records, it doesn't matter if you've consented to the disclosure or not.
Although it's funny, because it does matter in the physical world if you've consented to the search, right?
Right. But the thinking, at least maybe there would be some idea where if it's a really explicit provision, it would be different. But the sense I had, this is just a sense, the justices that wanted to rule for Carpenter wanted to limit this practice because they thought it just goes too far in giving the government too much power to gather information. And I don't think, I would be surprised if they would say, but if the providers want to add in a clause about consenting, that's fine.
All right. So let's assume now that it's 5 months from now, 4 months from now, and a major Supreme Court decision comes down and Carpenter wins on some theory. Obviously this depends on what the theory on which he wins and how coherent and cohesive it is with five votes. But what is the next question that a Carpenter win sort of necessarily begs for the court to consider in this area?
So there aren't cases sort of working their way up through the system that are raising these questions, because they're sort of not thought to be winnable under the current legal regime. So it's in the lower courts, the historical cell site record cases have gone in favor of the government every time, and six circuits and maybe 10 different state Supreme Courts. Depending on the theory that the court adopts, assuming there is something clear enough, you're going to see litigation over, I would guess, in thousands upon thousands of criminal cases across the country, challenging the record collection as being like the cell site records in Carpenter. You're going to have just massive amounts of litigation. And courts may try to avoid that with the good faith exception. They'll say this record collection happened before the Carpenter case, and so we don't have to get into the Fourth Amendment questions just on remedy grounds. But it's going to immediately trigger incredible amounts of litigation, assuming the justices have a hard time drawing a clear line as to what is covered and not covered. That's always been Carpenter's problem. What's the line you're going to draw, and what are the implications? You can sort of think of these cell site records as part of a constellation of maybe 200 or 300 different kinds of third-party business records. And if you're going to pluck that one out, which other ones do you pluck out? And you could say, we're not going to tell you. In which
right.
case, suddenly everybody's litigating. Great for business for me, but it could be pretty remarkable. Follow through if they do that.
All right. So hypothetical situation: you leave the Jungle Studio, you go back to your office at GW, you're getting ready to teach your last class, and the phone rings, and it is a conference call with five justices who say, "All right, Oren, we're voting against you. We're Carpenter's going to win." But we really want to do it on the least dramatic, least the most limited theory that will provide the most guidance to the lower courts
right.
and disrupt the fewest prior cases and give rise to the fewest subsequent Carpenter claims that extend this to every category of data that somebody could be described, that someone could describe as personal. How do we do it?
Yeah, so the first thing you do is you do the trick of distorting the facts. So instead of presenting the facts as what they actually are, you present them as if this was like incredibly invasive facts. And then you say, wow, these facts are so extreme that we have to treat them differently. But we're only treating them differently because probably I'd go with the location. You know, it's I would say it's like direct location information. It's not implied location. I mean, it really is implied location. But I would maybe come up with some direct versus implied location analysis and say, because they place a person and track over, you know, consistently over time, we treat it differently, but not short-term versus long-term. Any acquisition of a cell site record is always a search. Another question they'd have to answer, they might punt on ultimately, is whether it's a reasonable search without a warrant. So you can imagine a compromise answer if you get to it being a search, of it being it's a search, but actually the statute is enough and this lower level of cause is sufficient, and sort of now you create a whole new category of searches that are in this
right,
middle ground.
That are sort of intrusive but reasonable, and they're fine. Okay. You get back to your office, and it's Justice Alito and Justice Kennedy who are like, you know, these others are really going crazy on this, and they're Carpenter's going to win, and they're opening up the third-party doctrine in ways that are going to have a gazillion implications. What's the one they're not thinking of, that if they do this, we're going to hear 3 years from now, we're going to have oral arguments on something they never dreamed of that will be a completely plausible question based on Carpenter's having won?
I think the most plausible have been raised in the brief. It's credit card records, banking records, it's physical observation, walking somebody down the street. Is that now a search? Those are probably the big ones, but I'd have to think more about what the other sort of least likely one is that they're.
I mean, the one that keeps coming to my mind is all kinds of Internet of Things data,
right?
Right. You know, all of which, you know, you would have thought like your toaster records, or you know, you would have thought that's, you know, business you did with a third party. And I mean, it may not be very useful from a collection point of view, but I would think a lot of it would be at least a serious question once Carpenter wins.
Yeah. So the question of, you know, Fitbit data, Internet of Things data, all that was mentioned by Nate Wessler arguing for Carpenter. You know, I think. That's less likely to come up because it's just not all that useful in a criminal case. The stuff that's really useful in the criminal case are the issues, you know, the bank records and the credit card records that are just, you know, every case they're looking at. And then another interesting aspect, Justice Gorsuch suggested that perhaps subpoenas were unconstitutional writs of assistance from an originalist standpoint, which also a view that I suspect will only get one vote. But so that could actually be the most dramatic outcome if it actually has any poll with other justices. It's pretty dramatic rethinking of what the Fourth Amendment means.
All right. One last question from Facebook Live. Would a win for Carpenter invalidate the Stored Communications Act section on acquiring the records?
So we don't know what they would say if there's a warrant required or not. I gather it would mean that the way the Stored Communications Act is structured is they can get a 2703D order or a warrant. I gather effectively if Carpenter wins on both the search and the reasonableness grounds, it wouldn't so much invalidate the provision as say in the context of historical cell site records, you have to pursue the warrant option rather than the lesser clause option.
All right. Oren Kerr, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure reconvene in a few months to discuss whatever opinion emerges.
Sounds good.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Thanks this week to Liz Sablick and Vanessa Sauter, and to Oren Kerr for making this podcast and Facebook Live feed happen on short notice. Our music is, as ever, performed by Sophia Yan. You need to do your part to
promote the Lawfare podcast, to talk about it ad nauseum with people who don't want to hear about it, to tweet about it, to share it on Facebook, to do Facebook Live presentations about how much you love the Lawfare podcast. And of course, leave us that 5-star rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever podcast distribution service you use. And as always, thanks for listening.